from Headstuff Studios in Dublin, Ibarch LaFarce na Gaeilge. Welcome to Mother Folklore, a podcast about words.
Irish.
Irish words.
And words from Ireland.
I'm Derek O'Shea.
And I'm Padraig O'Crivonig. I got it right that time.
You actually did get it right this time.
I got it right that time.
For a change.
I've ruined it by saying that I got it right this time, but...
We'll see.
Well, you know what you can do?
What? Go fuck myself.
Jesus Christ. No, I was going to say Pogue Mahone.
Okay.
Let's say Pogue Mahone as a segue to the fact that we're going to talk about the Pogues this week.
Yes, well...
you absolute dolt.
Yes.
So you know what you can do? You can Pogue Mahone.
I certainly can. And that's particularly apt this week. Because one of the best known expressions in Irish language across the world is Pogue Mahone.
Which means kiss my arse.
Which was the original name of a band better known now as the Pogues.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I figured in order to discuss this, and to talk about this, I decided to summon in one of my favourite new podcasts in Ireland. It's a podcast called I Love This Band. It is made in Louth. It is made by Jennifer Quigley. She knows her stuff about music and she's in the studio today.
Yes, I am an amateur music historian from County Louth. Hello.
Sorry. Well.
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 That's the crack.
Jennifer's show, if you haven't heard it yet, I Love This Band, is great. Every week, what they do is she gets an interesting guest, and usually a musician, to talk about a band who they love. But it starts when Jennifer gives a little overview of the band themselves and you know, a little bit of history, and then it goes into a more in-depth discussion with someone who really knows their stuff, who really likes the band. It's a great show.
Thank you so much. But yeah, it's I think like everybody has this band that kind of just means a lot to them. In comparison maybe to some stuff they listen to casually. Everybody has that one band that they just hold very close to their heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in your teenage years.
You?
Oh, a lot. Like when I was a teenager, I was really big into like female fronted like punk rock and grunge. So I loved Hole, Courtney Love.
Oh, yeah.
I loved The Distillers, Brody Dalle.
Amazing.
So yeah, grunge and punk. Like when I was younger was, that was my
thing. Significantly cooler than me. Mine is Counting Crows.
Oh well, it's like I mean, I think I saw them before.
Oh yeah, I've seen them live. Amazing show. But yeah.
So that was kind of, I don't know. Yeah, so I suppose those would be two bands. I haven't actually profiled on my podcast yet because
you'd be interviewing yourself.
I'd be interviewing myself. It might run 4 hours and nobody will listen to it. So yeah, maybe
Derek would listen to it. He'd listen to it and he'd talk to me about for another 4 hours. He would. So one of those bands, one of those really special bands that resonates with a lot of people, a lot of Irish people and a lot of people of Irish descent all around the world is the Pogues.
The Pogues. Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought particularly because I mean, sometimes you talk to people and they've found their way into Irish from fantasy literature that mentions it. Sometimes they find into it through parenthood, but some people do find their way back to Irish through music. And a huge way of how Irish culture is represented has been through our musical traditions. And maybe the Pogues have done this in a very interesting way, particularly because of the historical circumstances that they came out of, the time and place they came out of, and. And there's that moment in Irish that happened to be happening in Irish history at the same time. And Shane McGowan is one of the most famous Irish people in the world. And just there's just a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
where do we even start?
Yeah, I mean, I think Shane McGowan to a lot of Irish people and to a lot of London Irish people he's kind of like a folk hero, you know? And I mean, he's gone from being kind of like viewed with suspicion and people kind of questioning his authenticity as a trad folk musician. And then, of course, then maybe this anti-Irish kind of sentiment from the 70s and 80s. And then, you know, but I think he's come through all that and now people really do look at him as kind of like the punk rock Ronnie Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he kind of does have that kind of persona.
We had the same kind of tribute paid to him, like an entire Late Late Show dedicated to him. So he's gone mainstream, basically. You know, he's accepted as one of the... He's in the pantheon of great Irish... musical stars. I won't say rock stars, but musical stars.
Oh, well, yeah, I would say rock star, yeah.
He's a rock star, but he's transcended even that to go up there with the greats from all genres.
The thing is about the Pogues, I mean, everybody kind of who likes punk rock or new punk rock kind of sees all these Irish-American bands kind of doing the whole quote-unquote Celtic punk thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that was perfected by Shane McGowan.
We're not going to body the Dropkick Murphys here.
We're not going to say anything mean about them.
We're not going to say anything mean about them. They're great guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, they do. They are indebted.
There would be no Blood or Whiskey. There would be no Dropkick Murphys. There would be no Black 47. There would be no, and even though they're like sort of rap metal and not quite.
Are they?
Yeah. Oh, they're incredible. There would be no Shanachie. There'd be all of these bands, you know.
Would not exist.
None of them without the Pogues.
And I think, you know, the Pogues are quintessential London Irish too.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm only 30, so I can't remember the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm. Dara can.
But, so I've always grown up with Shane McGowan there. And I think even growing up as a kid, I probably would have just thought he was from Dublin. I didn't, yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't know. He's just been that guy there the whole time.
There are Shane McGowan truthers who believe he was born and reared in Pocan in the County Tipperary.
Yeah.
They will not accept that he's London Irish.
I thought he was born in Tipperary.
He's quintessentially London.
Here's the thing. We know that that sometimes people are born and their family move when a child is young, one way or the other. There is a huge overlapping. And I remember a while back an English person said to me, they were giving out, it was recent, they were talking about the Spotify list, which said, oh, half of your music comes from Australia or 30% of your bands come from France. And this person was giving out saying that if AC/DC are Australian, then the Pogues are English. If you apply the same criteria of nationality.
Yeah.
But... No. I think that.
But can you say that AC/DC are definitively Australian bands?
I think people view them as the Australian flagship. In every country, I think, flagship rock band. Yeah, I think they are that, you know?
I mean, look, the Australians can be very proud of AC/DC and what they've achieved, absolutely. But, when they jump into your head, when you think of AC/DC, is the first thought Australian? Or is that reserved for, Men at Work?
I would say Aussie rock band.
But
when
you think of the Pogues, what's the first thing that drops into your head?
That's kind of what I mean.
Yeah.
But in saying that is that I grew up. He might as well have been from Dublin or Wicklow or somewhere. Yeah. The London Irish thing wasn't something I understood growing up. I didn't, you know.
Yeah,
I knew he had a bit of an English accent, but I just didn't. But I know people in Dundalk that were born in England, and they still have the twang of their accent, but they're pure town.
And so there's
town. You know? Right?
They put you in a box.
Exactly. Yeah. Hit you with a box.
Yeah. Of course, there's no one in Adi or Dada can use an R anyway.
Yeah. So, that doesn't, you know what I mean? I don't think your accent or your city where you live kind of, you know, writes over your Irishness. And I think that's kind of their punk rock MO. It's like, okay. Our parents came from Ireland.
Yeah.
Both my parents are Irish. I grew up listening to Irish music. I'm not Irish like maybe, the home country people are Irish. But the London Irish thing is an identity in itself.
Yeah.
And I think that was their kind of mission statement, I think, from what I've read about them.
And critically, I think a band like the Pogues may have had to come to Ireland from a distance because if they had come entirely from Ireland. They'd be from a county. They'd be a Cork band or they'd be a Limerick band. They wouldn't be.
Yeah, of course.
So in some ways, the London Irishness actually gave an opportunity for them to represent the entire island in a way.
Yeah.
That's made up otherwise.
That's a really good point because that is exactly how you two are quintessentially a Dublin band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love them or hate them. Boomtown Rats, a Dublin band. The Frank and Walters, a Cork band.
Yeah.
Bye.
Jape is a Louth artist.
Like the Corrs are quintessentially Dundalk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
completely town.
But look, I mean, we have a couple of bands doing quite well.
Did I say Jape? Jape's not from Louth, is he?
No,
Jinx Lennon.
Jinx Lennon, Jinx Lennon is a quintessential Dundalk.
Absolutely.
Outsider art. He does, he doesn't care. He's not from Dublin. He doesn't care. He's not from Belfast. He is himself.
Yeah.
And even some bands from Dundalk, like Just Mustard, TPM. Like these guys are flying the flag. For Dundalk.
My favourite band from Dundalk is an all-female collective called The Periods.
Yes.
They're pretty out there.
Yeah, we're pretty out there in Dundalk. I think we're an underdog, but there's so many creative people there and it's such a lovely scene, a lovely music scene, and I'm very proud of it.
So speaking of music scenes, one of the things you mentioned there, Jen, is that because you're 30, you don't have the lived memory of what the 80s were like. But to sort of sum it up, if we can, it was a hell of a time to be starting an Irish band in Britain.
Brave.
Yeah.
Brave. I mean, Yeah, I mean, I know as much. I can remember seeing like signs for the hunger strikers still up in the 90s in Dundalk when that happened in 1981. So that stuff kind of, it might not be in living memory, but it's kind of there. And even if you grow up from the 90s and 2000s, it's still stuff that's kind of talked about. It's mm-hmm. like recent history. So that's another, you know, interesting thing about them. It was very punk rock to showcase your Irishness at a time when Irishness was feared, hated, you know, looked mm-hmm. down upon. Even the way they looked.
Yeah.
They styled themselves. Was it Paddy Sheik or something he called it?
Paddy Sheik?
Yeah.
Love it.
It's in this, like this book I read that just really kind of opened my mind to this is Irish Blood, English Heart by Sean Campbell. It's pretty famous. But yeah, he wrote in there that Paddy Sheik was Shane McGowan's thing, that they kind of dress in like loose, bad fitting suits and like a no tie because you're all drunk and stuff. It's like Brendan like Behan kind of.
Irish Uncle at a wedding. Like, yeah.
Irish Uncle at a wedding. And that was like, that was the look. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if you're going to fear my Irishness, I'm going to look like the biggest Paddy possible. You know, my fiddle and my flute, and I'm going to, you know, I don't care, you know?
One of my favourite things I read about them was like, they kind of, like they came to the attention of the record label when they opened for The Clash, but they really came to public attention when they appeared on The Tube on Channel 4, playing doing a music video for their version of the trad song, The Waxies Dargle, throughout which Spider Stacey repeatedly smashed himself over the head with a beer tray. It is the single most on-brand thing a band could do.
Exactly.
And it's absolutely outrageous. Like, for the time, it's just unreal.
Using his head as percussion.
It's like, I'm going to say it about myself before you say it about me. It's very that.
Yes.
It's very that. I think as Irish people, we do have that self-deprecating thing. Like,
and it's only funny when we say it.
Yeah, but we're all on Twitter and we've all seen the Irish Twitter thing. Somebody puts a foot wrong on Irish Twitter, it's like a flipping, it's a feeding frenzy. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah, like
it's funny when we say it, but don't you dare say it about us.
Don't you dare say it about us. Yeah.
It is funny because there are some international tweeters who've wandered into Irish Twitter.
Accidentally.
And sometimes with great affection. And then you do see every now and then these articles saying, you know, look, Twitter in Ireland is different in terms of the actual proportion of the population represents, because people are spread out and we need it to keep together in a way that maybe...
Yeah.
That maybe... I don't think English Twitter has been populated and kept alive by people, expats missing a home.
I think, yeah. Okay, we'll go back to the London Irish thing. Like, yeah. If you're in... a young fella living in London for 3 years, you still have the same lived experience really as somebody here in Dublin. Do you know what I mean? You're going to be, the same things bother you. You've mm-hmm. got, you know, the same heritage behind you. So it is a lovely thing to keep the community together. And I would, because our country is so small, there's only what, 4 million of us?
Yeah, four and a half.
We're
yeah.
nearly more like a community than a country in some ways. Yeah. Like,
but there's fewer people in Ireland than there are in London.
Exactly. And we're 3 degrees of separation from each other, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you guys interviewed somebody I knew, you know? It's kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm fairly sure that you know someone I know.
Yeah.
Who we haven't, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But I love that, in a way. I do love that about Ireland. And, you know, that's what they were creating in London in the late 70s and the early 80s. They were creating a strong London Irish community, and they were... you know, celebrating their identity and playing. It's around Shane McGowan growing up in the punk rock movement would have looked at the likes of Johnny Rotten, and everybody forgets that Johnny Rotten has two Irish parents.
Yeah, John Lydon. John
Lydon is London Irish. Mm. So the most anti-establishment, anti-monarchy, feral man in punk rock.
Until he sold out and started doing ads for, what was it, butter or something. What was it?
We'll talk about that time. As a 19-year-old, right? I mean, he was pretty feared and I think that fire comes from his Irish heritage. That's a hot take. That's not back up yet. But I think a lot of that anti-establishment kind of frustration would come from, you know, being in that background.
But does it also come from, and you mentioned it early on, right enough, it comes from this sort of prevailing sentiment of anti-Irishness that, like,
absolutely.
At the time, late 70s, early 80s, Fawlty Towers has been on, like, where the Irish Builder was a punchline. You know, there's a whole episode where the joke is he's Irish and he's stupid and isn't he bad at his job? And this is from a universally loved comedy that was broadcast on primetime.
Like, the two Ronnies almost had Irishman jokes in their end thing. They said that it was almost among the writers, it was a competition because the writers are paid per gag,
right?
And they said, or the big thing was not just who got the best joke, who got the best Irishman joke.
Right.
Like
I watch a lot of the Tyrannies, and there's not a lot of it. You don't see a lot of it.
Maybe some of it. Maybe some of it's been cut out. Yeah.
Maybe they've been cut out. I mean, yeah. And I mean, not only, and we're not only talking about the Troubles, but also like I don't know, you know, the No Irish, No Blacks, No Dogs, yeah. Like those signs. I mean, if you are a young person growing up as a British person, but your parents are Irish, you're seeing these signs, and you're like, okay, people can't see my Irishness, they can't hear my Irishness, but I see it.
Yeah.
So you've got, you're like you a double agent.
You don't realise you're talking about me.
You are like a double agent because you're seeing the other side of it. So it's like, yeah, you've got a wider perspective. People get too comfortable around you maybe, you know?
So especially if you're there and you're in the punk scene, you're sort of this, people don't realise that like this attitude that they're displaying, this pro-British, anti-Irish attitude, well, that's against me. Like, you know, you can't tell, like you say, like you can't hear it in my accent. You can't hear it in, or you can't see it. Until I dress in Paddy Chic, you can't see it.
Yeah. Until I actually break out the fiddle in the middle of middle of the pit, like, you know what I mean?
Especially at the parallel side of this era was the kind of, I guess, the English presenting Irishman, or the kind of respectable kind of the between.
Oh,
the,
yeah, you had to English yourself up if you
What's
were.
What's that?
Like,
the Seanine? Is that what that Seanine means? That was Seanine.
I don't know if Terry Wogan quite counts as a Seanine. He was proud to be Irish, but you could hardly tell listening to him. You know, he's hardly, you know.
Yeah. Well, he was from Limerick too. He certainly didn't sound like a Limerick man.
Didn't sound like Blind Boy, like.
Yeah. No. or the old fellas in Limerick. Yeah. Oh God, I could listen to them read the phone book. I love it.
But I suppose the Dave Allen and Terry Wogan were hugely popular. Val Doolican still had his show on at the same time.
He's second generation though.
It was non-threatening. It was a non-threatening version of Irishness.
Diluted down, you know. These guys were like my waddy.
Yeah, but which is Irish. These guys were not diluted down. This was raw. This was in your face. This was punk. It wasn't pop punk. It wasn't soft. When they were starting out, they were like I said, they were opening for the Clash. They were really, really kind of out there, so out there that it almost really didn't work out for them.
Derek was talking about how I did an episode on The Clash too, and Joe Strummer would have been a fairly leftist figure at the time too, so he would have been very sympathetic to, you know, anti-racism and socialist movements and things like that. So yeah, I mean, I can see why they had an alliance in a way too. I heard a version of Straight to Hell. I think he did that with the Pogues. It sounded so cool. It just really worked, you know.
It did.
It's awesome. So awesome.
Mm. So you probably, in terms of the 80s, when the Pogues at the top, they probably have two really classic albums, Rum Sodomy and The Lash, and then If I Should Fall from Grace of God. And in both of these albums, Shane McCann intersects, you know, well-chosen, well-curated cover versions with his own writing.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing, actually, because we're talking about two identities here, you're talking about Irish people born and bred here like us who, you know. And then there's the London Irish identity. So on the cover of that album, it's a painting called The Raft of the Medusa by Jerry Coe. That's Rum Sodomy and The Lash. Mm. And that's apparently depicting somebody between two lands, between two worlds. So that's kind of what that's the message they were trying to send. Like, I'm not an Irish man, but I'm not. Okay, you say I'm not an Irish man, but I'm not an English man.
I'm too English for the Paddies, and I'm too Irish for the Brits.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of very poignant on that album too. Like, I thought that was very beautiful when I spotted that. There's symbols there that, you know, not the naked eye might not see.
And like a lot of that theme kind of runs through their songs, like, you know, through things like the sort of the desperate homesickness of the old main drag, like that absolute heart-aching lyrical poetry of McGowan's. And then you have, like, they covered British songs, they covered Dirty Old Town, which, guys, I don't know who needs to hear this, but it's not about Dublin. It's about Salford. Ewan McCall wrote it, yeah.
Yeah.
And it covered Eric Bogle's The Band Played Waltzing Matilda.
That song is so sad. So like, sad. It gives me chills. Like, listen to it in the car, I get really emotional.
Unreal. I generally skip over it unless I'm in a real...
The headspace to listen to it.
And like, the songs are just really about sad displacement and working yourself to death. Like, Paddy on the Railway, poor Paddy, you know, and...
A huge part of the Post got a big spike in popularity when The Wire came out, because the McNulty, Detective McNulty's, they're his favourite band. He'd listen to them a lot. And it was kind of like almost like...
Played by Englishman Dominic West.
Played by Englishman.
But they had to ham up his Irish-Americanness so that he loves the Pogues.
And Jameson.
Shot off the Pogue CD in his car, you know, yeah.
But it was kind of like almost like an operatic leitmotif that if there's a bit of the Pogues playing, you know, he's nearby. And also one of the Pogues songs was sang at every policeman's wake in Baltimore, which is a Body of an American.
Yeah, it's such a good song, though.
Yeah, it's such a cracking song. Big Jim Dwyer. First name is Slater, we are all for sex and whiskey. It was almost given lectures on ancient Irish history. Not my own certain set of jokes to him, and they got frisky. Play the cock in the union, every bastard there was pesky. For anyone. But one of New York City boys, Sebastian Rumpy, I took them out with a well of Valley Rock.
Every single song on that album, Rum Sodomy in the Night, is in its own way just so poignant, so perfect, so brilliant. Like A Rainy Night in Soho is arguably the greatest Irish love song. Like arguably the greatest. It's unbelievable.
A great funeral song too.
Yeah. I know a band from Britain, from where are they from? Welland Garden City, and they were called The Gorgeous Rex, and they covered it, but their lead singer had this very distinctive English accent. He's second generation Irish, Brian Burke, but the song, every time he sang it, it sounds like, on a rainy night in Soho. But it's absolutely class.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just like you said, you know, like Derek just said, like the place... covers of traditional Irish songs, like, you know, you've got like Marcin Durkin, like I'm a culty, right? We have Loud Me the FM, right? And there's interesting versions of that song being played all the time. I can rhyme it off. I didn't even need to listen to it today. I was like, no, I know that song too well.
But, and they, all the ones that they play on LMFM, they have the same backing track.
Oh, stop. Jeez, I could play them myself and I'm not even a great musician. But the songs, more so about being about Ireland, they're about being out of Ireland and being in a different place. It's displacement. Mm. And there is, it's just, there's ways in which I would listen to Rum Sodomy in the Lash, and something came to mind, and it was, I was reading about the homeless Irish in London and how the idea of not being able to go home.
Mm.
So you're kind of, like the painting on the cover, it's like you're in between two lands. You're kind of a transient in London, but your Ireland doesn't exist anymore because you're out of it for 40 years. And I was nearly crying in the pub there before I came in. Well, reading about this poor guy, Joseph Trohey from Tipperary, and he died alone in London last year. And I had when I was just thinking about all these songs, I couldn't help but think of that. Think of the idea of being kind of, you know, anonymous in London. Mm. And your homeland being kind of not what you remember leaving, you know? Yeah. It's kind of very sad.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll liven it up a bit now. I'm sorry. No, but all these themes are kind of interwoven in all their music, I think, you know?
A big thing about the London Irish community, a large part of the London Irish community, particularly from the 50s onwards, was that like a lot of emigration, it was highly gendered. You had a lot of a disproportionately high amount of men going over, spending their time basically officially having to send money over, but the only social outlet being these Irish pubs that were kind of dangerous places. A lot of toxic masculinity being pushed there. A situation where you were seen as a sellout for fitting in too much, but not fitting in meant you would be left completely alone, like some of these like Irish homeless people. It's a tragic thing. I'm glad to know that the London Irish Centre, great pals, I've did a talk there recently. They are doing some great outreach for that.
I got to go there. I have a friend in London. She lives in Islington, and we went there, and I was just delighted to see a big picture of Big Tom on the wall. I just thought that was so funny. I actually took a picture. I was like, this is great, because it really is a little slice of home. Like, it is nice to have these places.
And
talking about being kind of, you know, not accepted in London and not accepted in Ireland, like the Pogues did come over to Ireland and play their music, on the Late Late Show and things like this, and they were not received well.
No. We had this weird sort of relationship where we were sort of, in a vicarious way, very proud of them for doing so well. But 'tis shocking altogether, the language and the themes of the songs, and it's not very appropriate. And so I don't want to hear that on the Late Late now.
I don't know if this is kind of this thing in the 80s where it was kind of very puritanical here, and maybe people wanted to kind of quote unquote, better themselves and not be the paddy on the railway anymore and be perceived in a kind of a yuppie sort of way and kind of looking down on those old stereotypes because they were seen as demeaning. And here's Shane McGowan.
Just hamming it up.
Second generation Irish guy coming over dressed like a drunken uncle at a wedding with a fiddle, piss drunk, teeth
singing
falling
like
out.
One summer evening drunk to hell, I sat there nearly lifeless.
And it's like people probably looked at them and were mortified. Like, this is what you. This is how you choose to represent Ireland. They just didn't understand what all the London Irish stuff and, you know, stuff behind it. They didn't understand.
Yeah,
you know,
that sense of displacement. But like you're trying to convey a sense of displacement to the people who have literally abandoned you and forgotten about you, and they don't care about second generation immigrants in London. They just don't understand. Don't want to. Can we not have Sandy Kelly and Daniel O'Donnell on the Late Late Show instead, please? Thank you very much.
Country special.
But also, I think, though, and there's an interesting parallel. There's another Irish band who kind of started off at the same time and were called U2. And they were maybe probably a just different kind of aspirational. And I think probably U2's popularity, especially around the time of Live Aid, was very connected to a new sense where Ireland had always had a perception of itself as being poor. And then suddenly U2 and Live Aid and Bob Geldof started connecting Irish poverty to historically innocent whiteness. And people were much more comfortable with that.
And they play upon that. And like you do often see Bono, anytime there's something to do with a marginalised community, he will be like, coming from a boy from the north side of Dublin, and everybody's cringing. It's not
Paul.
It's
give
not,
it a rest, Paul.
And like, do you know what? He is. Sometimes I think, he is actually pure of heart, and he doesn't really mean. You know, he's trying. This is his way of kind of extending out. But I think everybody else doesn't kind of see it the way he does. Especially nowadays, where everybody's a little bit more kind of versed on these topics. It's not like,
and a bit more hard nosed and cynical, to be honest with you as well. Like, we don't swallow it as easily. And one thing don't like is we've all got a bit pogish now. We don't like being pontificated to.
Yeah,
we kind of just push it back at people.
Yeah. And definitely.
But I suppose certainly at the time, and it took a while for the Pogues to be completely accepted in Ireland, I think, like that, because there was a perception that the traditional Irish music community felt that that these songs should be sang in a certain way. And then whereas the punk element, even still, I think that those people still thought punk, even though it was a huge part of the Irish community involved in it, this still saw it as a very British thing.
Yeah, I mean,
in the 80s anyway.
Like another episode I did on mine, me and Carly were talking about, she's Canadian, so she always perceives 70s punk as English 70s punk. And I'm like, no, I usually think of it more as kind of the two. I said, because I'm in between the USA and England, I'm looking back in that history going, no, it was happening at the same time.
Yeah.
But what happened was the English guys were importing American punk, and then that version of it was being brought back into America again, so it all got mixed up. So nobody knows where anything came from.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's kind of like,
so you kind of have the New York Dolls and the Sex Pistols like active at the same time, doing the same kind of thing.
Well, Malcolm McLaren would have seen the New York Dolls and thought, oh, this is cool, so we would have brought it back to England and go, okay guys, dress like crazy. Sid Vicious would have wanted to look like a Ramone with a leather jacket.
Yeah.
So then the Sid Vicious look would have been brought back into America, and then the American guys are trying to look like Sid Vicious, and then, you know, it's you know, then nobody knows where it came from.
You fast forward a little bit and you end up with Justin Bieber. Somehow, we don't know
exactly
what process
happened.
Is, but yeah.
Yeah, like bad photocopies are bad photocopies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically, it's like it snowballs and then nobody knows how it started.
This episode is sponsored by Forrest na Gaeilge, who are celebrating 20 years of promoting the Irish language, Féibní Ag Fós. Here is just one of the projects they do.
Gnó means business. Forrest na Gaeilge offer a wide range of free support to encourage the use of Irish as a business marketing tool, including consultation, guides, and translation supports to raise awareness about using the Irish language. They also provide the business support scheme, funding, advice and proofreading to develop bilingual signage, stationery and marketing material. The QARC Gnó na Gaeilge Award System acknowledges business organisations that evaluate, develop and capitalise on the use of the Irish language throughout the island of Ireland. You can find out more about Gnó Means Business on Twitter at Gnó Os Gaeilge. Forrest na Gaeilge, celebrating 20 years. Siar Jean Gahéni.
So I love Rum Sodom and the Lash, but I think if I Could Fall from Grace of God was more commercially successful album, I think that is the one which has probably the even more famous songs.
Definitely has the most famous punk song. It has their Irish number one, British number two, and favourite at Christmas all around the world, but not without controversy.
Of
Fairy
course.
Tale of New York.
So yeah,
we can't really not talk about Fairy Tale of New York.
And I'll open with saying that this came out, Fairy Tale of New York came out the same year as Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, which also has had a verse that included the offensive word in question.
Okay.
But they just cut that from the radio version. They cut that verse from the radio version. It was in Dire Straits. And the real question is, why wasn't, like, I mean, so many Pogue songs have swear words, expletives, in context, objectionable words, for either through persona or through representing someone, a character who isn't bad. But it was just, the fact that it wasn't bleeped out at the time and it was let run seems to be a very odd decision.
Well, look, back then, I don't think people were as, receptive to, LGBT issues, right?
Yeah.
So that's a big reason why. It's not like now where we're kind of like, no, it's just not acceptable. It's not acceptable to use those words.
Yeah.
And yeah, like the word in question could be edited out or it could be replaced with another word.
Yeah.
And that's nearly more fun.
I think so.
You know.
I think, Patty, you had a couple of suggestions or notions on that one.
You scumbag, you maggot, you taped over Taggart.
I'm not quick enough now. I can't freestyle. I'll have to leave that with me for a while.
As if that's freestyling. I suppose one of the things about it is like, in context, and you speak quite correctly about the time, like people not as sensitive to LGBTQ plus issues, not kind of realizing that this is more than just a harmful word. Obviously, in character, in context, in the song, it's being thrown as an insult. It is a slur and everybody knows it is.
Yeah.
And one of the characters is throwing, like, somebody has just been called an old slut on Junk and then they throw back the F slur, right? But that is not really the crux of the issue when it comes to this. The problem is the warmth and the gusto and the passion with which it's now belted out by people singing the song, and that people are now treating it as an excuse to say a word that they're not normally. Like, it's kind of treated the way the N-word is in rap songs, that, like, it gives white douchebags an opportunity to shout out the N-word at the top of the voice, and it's not cool.
It's kind of like if you say something and it really hurts your friend.
Yeah.
You would be apologetic to your friend and be like, oh God, I'm so sorry I said that. Like,
You wouldn't be going, it's in the song.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be like, gee, I'm so sorry that I said that about you. I was stupid and I was ignorant. I didn't realise by saying that I was going to really hurt you and make you feel ostracised. You would be apologetic. So why does singing a song, why is that different, you know? Like, yeah, I mean, just showing people respect is more important than a 30-year-old song and its lyrical content, as far as I'm concerned. So, and I mean, it is one of the most famous, most played Christmas songs of all time. I have to admit, I get sick of it now because I just feel like I've heard it my whole life. But
and it wasn't written to be a Christmas hit. I think people said, "Hey, this song has Christmas mentioned in it. Maybe we should release it as a Christmas single." I don't think it was like envisioned the way "Wish It Could Be Christmas Every Day" was envisioned as a Christmas song.
And what about that lyric? The boys of the NYPD choir were singing Galway Bay. So is that about the actual police, or is that about the guys in the cell? What's that lyric about?
It's the guys in the cell.
It's the guys in the cell.
The New York Police Department has never had a choir.
Right.
They have a pipe band. The NYPD choir it's again, like, we go back to the theme earlier on of anti-Irishness, but like in America it was anti-drunk Irishness. The NYPD choir is the Irish boys pissed out of their minds in the holding cell, or the
and
drunk tank
singing,
as it's known. And they're singing
the L Triangle or whatever.
Well, they're singing Galway Bay.
Or Galway Bay.
Galway Bay, exactly.
Oh, yeah, singing Galway Bay. Yeah. And
this
the bells.
Like,
yeah.
This is like the theory behind paddy wagons. And coming from the fact that there was Irish police force, or is it just because they picked up the Irish?
There was a little bit of both.
And the whiskey train was the train to Queens, I think. Which
the whiskey train. That's a really good name for a Celtic punk band, if anybody's listening. The whiskey train.
We'll set it up. We'll do it. What can you play? Quick, guys. Quick. Somebody else is going to do it.
I don't know.
Tambourine.
Tom Waits is Uncle Whiskey Train, doesn't he?
Is he sung Whiskey Train?
I believe.
That's a fantastic name for a Celtic punk band.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
The whiskey train. Yeah.
I'm reading up, this is one of my, this is just how weird people get about the song Fairy Tale in New York, and in particular the slur that, like, we really shouldn't be cool with.
No.
When Katie Melua performed the song with the Pogues on ITV in December 2005, ITV censored the word arse. Happy Christmas, your arse, I pray God
it's
our
last. Censor the
and didn't censor the F slur. Like, it's just...
See, the thing is too, right?
Guys.
I'd say Shane McGowan is probably... I mean, I don't know if he cares, but I mean, he's written so many songs and this is getting so much... It's getting so much time. This song is like the most talked about song, for better or for worse. And like, there's so many other songs he's written. That must be so frustrating in a way too. Do you know? But listen, the main thing is just don't say that word. It's not nice.
Yeah.
Be nice to your friends.
Even Shane McGowan just said, like, you know what I mean? He said in a statement, like, he wrote it because it's in character. It's what someone would say in that situation at that time. Like, he's no problem with you bleeping it. He just doesn't want an argument about it.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, just...
He's probably like, I've got other albums, guys. Like, do you want to listen to them?
Like, I mean, and like, it's not as if Shane McGowan is in any way homophobic. Like, if you listen back to stuff like The Old Main Drag.
Yeah, that's about, like, a gay sex worker.
A male sex worker, exactly, being raped and abused. Like, it's...
Yeah,
it's
the old men incredibly winking at you. And like,
but it's sensitive and it's lovely and it's heartbreaking.
He's not judging that. He's actually, it's sympathetic to the protagonist. And it's kind of like, it's another version of that theme of displacement, where this guy, we're going to assume he's London Irish or something, or an immigrant or a transient. And he's in a desperate situation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his reality.
So just do what Shane would do and just be fucking sensitive about it.
Be cool.
It.
Like,
don't do a Gavin and Stacey on it and, and I mean, roar it and have a laugh.
Yeah, and the two characters in it are really undesirable and they're really horrible to each other. You know what I mean? It's not really that romantic,
it's
that song.
It's not aspirational. Like, it's not.
No, you don't want to be like that.
It's kind of like, you know, the recent thing about, like, Kimochi Black and Tans getting to the charts. And, like, let's face it, bop. Absolute song, right? Tune, right? But a lot of people don't realise it's a satire of a rebel song. Dominic Behan wrote it about his dad coming home steaming drunk and roaring at Protestants. Like, it's not actually about someone who fought the Black and Tans.
The thing is about that song, though, I do understand why people find it very empowering, you know, because it is like, I think it was Blind Boy said it, it's like a gangster rap song. Like, it actually is.
It's a call to arms.
It's a call to arms and it's anti-authority. And like, it is, to be honest, that is hard, I would say, punk rock too, you know, like, because it is so... crazy.
There's a writer in Boston called Tom Dunn, not the same guy from Something Happens.
Is this Tom with an H?
There's Tom with a H, and he, as well as being a journalist and a musician, he has done a mashup, Glee style mashup, between Fuck the Police and Comanche Black and Tans, and it's pretty cool.
Oh my god! Okay, we got to find that.
You're going to have to tweet that one out now, because that sounds amazing. That sounds like every young fella in Ireland will be like blasting that out of a flipping hatchback.
That is.
I was born in a Dublin street where the royal drums do beat, and those loving English feet, they walked all over us. And every single night when me dad would come home tight, he'd invite the neighbours out with this fine chorus. Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. A young Nick got a bat in this town. Tans have authority to kill a minority, and fuck that shit, because I ain't no one.
Gangsta for life.
I'll be blasting that out of my Yaris now. Watch me.
That is pure pokes. That is a Yaris.
Yeah, that's it. Me and my friend were like listening to it. Was a Biggie and Tupac in my very old Toyota Yaris. And I was like, this really isn't, it's not really giving out that effect. She was like, no, because it's old. It's like an aesthetic, you know.
It is. It's a vibe. It's a massive, it's a
we're
big
vibing,
mood.
Just
it's
vibing.
A big mood.
Didn't they work at, isn't the Yaris the most popular car among nuns in Ireland?
The Yaris Verso certainly is. My wife used to drive a Yaris Verso.
Yeah, some guy told me.
It's like the van version of a Yaris. My wife drove them for many years and the only other people we saw driving it were nuns. Hello, fellow Yaris Verso driver.
I'm going to defend the Yaris drivers out there. When you're at the airport, you can get into the tightest little spaces and you can watch these people with their BMWs struggling. Give them a wee wave.
Beep, beep.
Well. Definitely. So the, Five Shuffle for Grace of God, as well as having Fairy Tale New York on it, also has my favourite Pogue song, which is Thousands Are Sailing.
Okay.
Written, not by McGowan, but by Phil Chevron, yeah?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
But
I love Phil Chevron. He was class.
In Thousands Are Sailing, they make a connection between the famine ships moving over, the experience of being Irish in New York and in America, connecting the Kennedys to Brendan Behan, to the music of George Cohen, the Times Square's favourite bard.
Oh.
That guy.
Yeah.
And a blackbird breaks the silence as it was like that. And Brendan Behan's footsteps had danced up and down the street. But then this moment of crying after a party is just so powerful. And
crying after a party is also so relatable.
Yeah.
All too relatable.
I kept joking I was going to have my birthday cry when I turned 30, but I, you know, actually had a good, a nice birthday. But, you know.
So have you hadn't had your birthday cry yet?
I've had a birthday cry, yeah. Okay. I'm over it now.
That's good.
You know?
I'm glad to
yeah,
hear it.
It's like a purge, you know.
You're the youngest person on the podcast by some years. So, okay. Yeah, so enjoy
okay,
that.
Okay, right. I still enjoy have the fountain that. Of youth. 30 years drinking out of it.
It's younger siblings turning 30 that kicks you.
Yeah.
Been there.
Yeah.
So Phil Chevron wrote that one, also known from his time with Philip Chevron and the Radiators from Space, which is arguably the all-time greatest band name of all time.
I didn't catch that. What was that?
Philip Chevron and the Radiators from Space.
The Radiators from Space.
Yeah. Unreal. Yeah. Like, it's absolutely class. Amazing songwriter. Like, but was in the Pogues from 1985 on for a while. Was there around about the same time as well when Joe Strummer took over from Shane McGowan? There was this massive period where Shane McGowan left the Pogues.
Yeah.
I didn't know of it.
And Joe Strummer was the lead singer for a while.
You see, I love that. That's amazing.
And then Spider Stacey was the permanent lead singer for a while. And then McGowan came back for a sort of a reincarnation of the Pogues.
Yeah. Right. He just went for a walk and came back.
Shane McGowan was briefly involved in a band called the Popes instead, after himself and the other Pogues had a difference of opinion. On a number of matters. He formed a band called The Popes, which has seemed awfully similar to it. But this is during a kind of a lull during the 90s, probably when, I guess also at this time, you had Riverdance, you had The Corrs, you had certain elements, which arguably these things are being made possible. But the idea that you started having pop music have incorporating elements of Irish music, like Westlife having those kind of fiddly bits and The Corrs having those fiddly bits.
Nothing can hold a candle to Bewitched's little sad little bit.
Yeah, Handle Tree.
That's kind of taking back your Irishness in a totally different way, though, isn't it?
It is.
Like,
yeah,
I fight like me da.
But it was a phenomenon that was made safe by the Pogues.
Yeah. I guess so. The Pogues made it cool.
They made Irishness a marketable.
You could say that the Pogues kind of, you know, breaking the wall down in the 80s. Again, this is like, you know, not to disregard anybody else's efforts, but like you're coming into the early 90s, late 80s to the mid 90s. And suddenly, yeah, there's this kind of Celtic renaissance where suddenly Riverdance is making millions. Everybody, it's so popular. It's not to my taste, but you know.
Is Enya still the most successful Irish recording artist of all time? Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's one for you.
Yeah. Sinead, of course. Yeah. Like Sinead pretty much sings in her accent, and she's like, her brand, as I said, is a Celtic songstress. She didn't change her name. She's Sinead O'Connor.
Fucking right. Get that down, you.
And then if you combine that then with the Cranberries and like Dolores O'Riordan, like
who absolutely sang in her accent.
Absolutely sang in her Limerick accent, and a beautiful singer kind of drawn from Shan Nose and all these kind of influences. And incredible. They had a very, almost, I would call it a big American sound, because it's like a sound so big it can fill an arena. And you two had that as well, you know.
Yeah. Give them their dues, like, you know, you don't have to be a fan to realise that at a certain stage, and a very recent stage, you two were the biggest band in the world by a stretch. Like, there was no one to hold a candle to them until maybe Green Day releasing American Idiot and sort of going, they did the same kind of genre breaking sort of quantum leap. But
And I don't know, in the 90s too, there's probably all these films about Ireland and Far and Away.
A man has to have land.
Do you know what my favourite cheesy Irish-American movie is? The Devil's Own with Harrison Ford and Brad Pitt.
So awful.
That's why I love it.
Yeah.
It is so good. It's terrible. It's so bad. It's great.
It's incredible.
Brad Pitt tried to distance himself from it after it was made, before it was released. He tried to, he had been contacted by some fans whose family members have been victims of IRA violence. And
this is pre the Good Friday Agreement, you know?
Yeah. And he said, but also himself and Harrison Ford didn't get on very well. At what point, apparently Brad Pitt referred to him as Ham Solo.
Oh,
that's a very Dundalk insult, actually. Ham Solo. Yeah. Can we start saying that, everybody? Is there Dundalk people listening? You ham solo.
You ham solo.
Stadia.
I'll hit your box, you ham solo.
I used to work with a guy from Dundalk, and as it happened one day, another colleague, a very nice, innocent kind of guy, was like, you know, lads, good news. Like Super Value today, they got half price hams in. He goes, you're a bit of a half price ham yourself.
That's fantastic.
I fully expect a text this evening from my brother-in-law, Shane, listening to this on his way back home from Dundalk, saying, "It's a shade accent."
But yes.
Still though, you're a bit of a half-price ham yourself.
And your ham solo. God, yeah. You know, somebody from Dundalk is going to change their Twitter handle to that. I hope so. Ham solo. Please ham do. Solo.
It's also a great band name.
Yeah, yeah. We've had
ham sandwich. Yeah. Now we can have ham solo.
Yeah, a Dundalk folk punk band. Come on, guys. Ham solo. Ham solo. Get it going.
Ham solo. You can be supported by the Whiskey Train.
Exactly. Just making up bands now.
That sounds great.
If I Should Fall from the Grace of God, did that one have Fiesta on it?
I think so.
Because that's an absolute tune. All your rambling boys of pleasure, the ladies of easy leisure, we must say adios until we see a Maria once again.
And then also that is something that got sampled a lot. It's a real reeling in the ears background piece. And
I love the moment on Reeling in the Ears where the music stops and there's silence. Some terrible shit just happened.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you hold your breath, don't you?
Get ready for a good cry. Shit.
We're about to have a whole new series of Reeling in the Ears, and the first episode is going to have a guy slipping on ice.
Yes!
Oh, that guy. Do you know what? Like, has that guy ever come out and identified himself?
Absolutely not.
This is why. This is why some people think he may have died that day.
Oh yeah, there's this new conspiracy theory now. It's like he's actually dead. That's why we haven't heard of him since he's dead.
A beer company put up a plaque on the spot where it happened. Mm. Welcome to the branded hellscape of the 2020s.
Oh yeah, I know. And it literally is put up so people can take a picture of it and put it on Instagram and Twitter.
It's got a logo of the beer company. Exactly.
Yeah. Some good marketing there.
Yeah, but so yeah, Fiesta is incredibly sampled. It's all over the place, but it's a strange departure from not in terms of tempo or upbeatness, because they always had upbeat songs and they always had sort of songs you could dance to. But it's just a bit of a departure in terms of storytelling. It doesn't have the same kind of, not that it's incredibly commercial itself, but it's kind of showcases the range of the Pogues. There's a bit more musicality to it. It was a bit like,
was there a bit more kind of flamenco in it? And why does that just work so well? Why does a kind of Irish trad and folk kind of work so well sometimes with Spanish or mariachi music?
The Armada came over and rode us sideways. We're all a little bit Spanish.
That's how the story. Yeah, that's what we like to think.
Anybody with anyway dark hair in Ireland.
The Spanish Armada there.
He looks Spanish. Yeah, he wishes.
Hello, my name is Juan. I am from the Armada. Would you like to have sex? Juan, you're so rogue.
Half a Connemara. They've got dark hair and quite sallow skin. Oh, it's the Armada. It's not. He's working fucking picking potatoes like 9 hours a day.
All day.
His skin is leather.
I know. Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. Poor old Jose landing in the Armada, trying to crawl his way back into the boat and being dragged in.
Get back here, boy.
Yeah. I think combining the Spanish music and the Irish music, it is kind of that very kind of socialist leaning kind of sympathies towards kind of, you know, fighting the oppressor and all that kind of stuff. And you've got a lot of that obviously in South America.
Yeah. Even, and to be honest with you, you probably would have definitely had the lived memory of it in Spain even at that time, which was just coming out of Francoist rule and being restored to being a royalist constitutional monarchy. I think people tend to forget we are not very far removed from the spectre of fascism.
Yeah.
No,
you know,
not at all.
Franco died in the 70s, and the Pogue songs have a very anti-fascist leaning in a big way. To go back to Rum Sodomy and the Lash, when you deck that fucking black shirt who was cursing all the Yids, it's yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
No passer on.
Yeah, because the identity is an underdog identity, and the underdog does not like fascism.
Definitely not. And I think Julio Iglesias was banned in the USSR because he represented fascist Spain in the Eurovision.
Yeah, well, He represented Spain, and you know, I don't know Julio Iglesias' personal leanings, but he was a favourite of Franco, and he was Spain's most famous pop star at the height of Franco's
rule. What about
rule.
Enrique? What's his views on socialism?
I think he's staunch.
You think?
What kind of hero is he?
I
imagine he has kind of moderate centrist views. Ah, now Daniel O'Donnellish. No. Actually, I won't slur Daniel O'Donnell. Daniel O'Donnell's a good guy.
Is he still married to Anna Kournikova?
Oh, I don't know. That's going
say
back.
Anna Kournikova in a loud accent.
Anna Kournikova.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Sounds better. Nice. Yeah. Sounds better than the way I said.
I know her well.
She's a halfway ham.
But so, I mean, to wrap up, yeah, because we
to go from Enrique Iglesias' Michael status.
I know off topic there.
No, but it's, I think now it's...
What's your favourite Pogue song then? If you had to choose one.
Do you know, I do like The Old Man Drag. I do like that one.
It's pretty spectacular.
Do you know? Yeah. And there probably is other ones, but you put me on the spot now, so I'm trying to think just the top of my
head. The spot's good. We like this good reaction. I'm going to opt for Haunted.
Yeah.
Which is, it is haunting. Like, it's unreal. There's a version of it done with Sinead O'Connor, but the version with Cathal Reardon doing the female lead is pretty good as well. Like, it's
looks
just
so cool. You could have put out Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to be haunted by the ghost.
And I do like the band. I know that it's a cover the band played Waltzing Matilda, but it's just so moving. That's what I like.
Sometimes
it's very moving.
The cover version is the best version. Mm. Mm. Oh, yeah. You know, in a big way.
Like a real, a true songwriter respects the songwriting of others and just finds something in it. So that is definitely something. Do you think they'll ever be a band like them again?
Yes.
Like the Pogues?
Oh, yeah. It's not going to be punk rock, but there is a bit of a... There's young 25-year-olds now at the moment who are really embracing their trad roots, and you're going to see more of it. It's coming. And it's on the rise. Do you know what I mean? Nice. It's like there was a time in Ireland where people thought Guinness was an ale full of drink. Now if you go out to the Workman's Club, everybody's probably drinking a Guinness. Do you know what I mean? There's these little simmerings going on at the moment. Yeah,
he's saying it's kind of cyclical. Like these things come around again.
Yeah, it's like Shane McGowan coming on the Late Late Show and everybody being like, oh my God, he's making a show of us. to people looking at him now and being like, wow, he's the most punk rock Irish man ever. Yeah, we love him. Yeah. He's not British, he's ours. You know, there is that. I'm telling you, it's coming.
It's incredible to see the Pogues going from, you know, their beginnings where they couldn't possibly have started in Ireland through, oh, they're on the Late Late Show and he's making a show of us, to getting his own Late Late Show and being absolutely universally acclaimed, completely loved by the Irish people. And like, if anyone has a bad word to say about Shane McGowan, we'll fight you in the car park.
Actually, another one I like, and it's on YouTube. I don't know. There's a recorded version. It's Shane McGowan playing with the Dubliners and singing the Irish Rover, and he's got Ronnie Drew with his hands in his pockets standing beside him, and it's just, oh, it's just so cool. There's something so organic. It has the feeling of a pub session, and I just love that song.
It's pretty cool. That was on the Late Late as well, wasn't it? On the tribute to Ronnie Drew or something like that, is it?
Well, Ronnie Drew was performing with him. I don't know when it was. The clip looks like it's from the 80s early 90s.
Definitely from Irish television though.
Nearly 100% sure. Yeah, you can kind of tell.
we have the Pogues and the Dubliners. Let's put them both on the show at the same. Let's go. Come on, get it done. Do you remember when the Late Late Show used to have great guests?
every episode you have to drag the Late Late Show.
Yeah, the only great guest they have now is if it just happened that the Pogues and the Dubliners were eating in the RTE canteen, they might accidentally end up on the...
Sure, they have that young fellow likes watches.
He was great. The horologist from the Late Late Toy Show a couple of years ago.
Oh, the little fellow, yeah.
And the kids on the tractors. There's always a social media star, a sensation every year. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant and terrifying for your parent.
Yeah.
But... Jennifer, we love to ask all our guests what their favourite Irish word is.
Okay. I've got one that's just from my childhood that I remember, because my old headmaster, Lorcan O'Hulacan, was a Gaeilgeor, and I'm not really, but he would have been very passionate about his heritage and stuff. Mm. He used to always say Ludramon.
Oh, brilliant.
And I just love that word.
Did he say it to you about you?
No, I was always a really good student, but like he'd be there like saying, ah, you Ludramon, you know? And I've just, like, ever since I left primary school, I never heard anybody really say it much. And I just, it always stuck in my head, Ludramon, yeah.
There's like a lovely hierarchy of insults that like, it's not actually that insulting. It's kind of playful. And it's kind of, you know, like, you Aegis can be playful.
Yeah.
Or it can be actually really biting, like, depending on how you say it. But Ludramon is always sort of soft, playful. It's not mean.
It's not mean. No. It's like, yeah, it's like a light slag, you know?
Light slag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A poke of sorts.
You're a poke of sorts yourself.
Jennifer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's been brilliant. It's been enlightening and fantastic. And
can you tell? No, go on. Can you? Sorry, go ahead.
Where can we hear more of you and your podcast and what you're up to?
My podcast is called I Love This Band, and it's available on Spotify. It's available on Apple Podcasts, whatever search apps you use. And you can follow me on Instagram at I Love This Band Pod. And yeah, I'm on Twitter at JenQWeb. It's up to yourself if you want to follow me there. I talk an awful lot of shite. So.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure talking shite with you.
Thank you so much, guys. I really loved that now.
Thank you so much. So until the next time, it's a slán from me.
Agus slán, Wemshire.
Mind yourselves. What a great episode.
Yeah.
What a great episode. It was wonderful to talk to Jen Quigley on our show about the Pogues.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. One of my favourite bands, and it's great to learn more about them. Really, really fascinating. Social history of the Pogues is great, and, you know, highly recommend listening into Jen's podcast as well. I love that band. Really cool.
This band.
I love this band. I love this band. Sorry, Jen.
Yeah, her show, I Love This Band, is great.
Yeah. Motherfuckler comes out every Friday on the Headstuff Podcast Network. You can get us at motherfuckler@headstuff.org. And if you think we sound good, you can record in this very studio. The podcast studios by Headstuff are just open. And it's a fantastic opportunity for you or for your business to record a podcast, a video podcast, a vlog, whatever you're actually putting together. Headstuff can accommodate you. We had the opportunity to record the podcast you just listened to in their fantastic video podcast room. We don't have film to show you, but trust us, we look gorgeous. So yeah, you can find them on the podcast studios.ie.
Podcast studios.ie.
Thanks as always to Kirsten Cheel for the amazing artwork and to Brian for producing.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Yeah.
Speaking of Elvis Costello, yeah, his real name apparently is Declan McManus.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Declan Patrick McManus.
There's another one, yeah. Yeah, a kind of secret covert
secret Paddy.
Covert Paddies, yeah.